times roll.
Welcome to All Ears, the official podcast of the Cedar Rapids Colonels, presented by Miracle Ear. I'm your host and voice of the Colonels, Calvin Cristoforo. On the podcast, you'll hear from past and present Cedar Rapids baseball influencers, including players, managers, executives, insiders, and more.
Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
It's another edition of the Colonels All Ear Podcast presented by Miracle Ear. We are rolling through season four, and we get a very special guest today. One of the best seasons in Cedar Rapids baseball history belongs to our guest, Jeff Jones. He joins the podcast, a Cedar Rapids Red from 1980 to 1982. In that season in 1982, one to remember, 42 home runs, the most ever in a single season by anyone in the Midwest League, a record that still stands today and will probably be never broken. Jeff, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for joining us.
Calvin, thank you so much for reaching out. Always appreciate Cedar Rapids, always appreciated what I did long, long ago. So it's, when you mention 80 and 82, it does seem like a couple of years ago now.
But when you got to Cedar Rapids, that wasn't your first taste of baseball in Iowa. I mean, you went to the University of Iowa. I'm curious, we can start there. What drew you to play for the Hawkeyes?
Short story long, there were some guys on the Legion team I played on, Brooklawn American Legion in Brooklawn, New Jersey, near Gloucester in South Jersey. There was a connection through Dwayne Banks and a couple other coaches that sent a few guys from that team. And in the end, at about eight guys went on scholarship from the Brooklawn American Legion team. Started with Brian Jones, a second baseman who was an All-American, and then Mark Yule, Rich Carlucci, Mike Narducci, Tony Burley, myself, Eddie Garten. So there was a number of players that went from that area out to Iowa. And that's kind of that's how I got there. Mark Yule was a Haddon Heights graduate. I was from Haddon Heights, but we all played on the same American Legion team in the summer.
Interesting.
And that's kind of how I got to Iowa.
A New Jersey to Iowa pipeline, not something you would think of. And then after your career at Iowa, drafted in the 1979 draft, do you remember, you know, what it was like getting drafted? What was your reaction when the Cincinnati Reds gave you the call?
Obviously, for me, I mean, the reason I went to college was to play baseball. So I went for all the wrong reasons, I guess, if you're talking about college. But it was a wonderful, wonderful time to get the call. The only negative is my father had passed away about 8 months before, so he did not get to see me get drafted. So there was a little bit of negative with the positive, a little sad with the happy, but it was a wonderful experience. You know what I mean? For a kid that's what I wanted to do, it was everything I wanted.
And what about when you found out, okay, I got drafted, you go through rookie ball in 79, and you're going right back to Iowa, just 30 minutes up the road from where you played your college ball?
I guess it was extremely positive because I knew the place. I knew all around. I knew Cedar Rapids. My roommate was from Cedar Rapids. He went to Cedar Rapids Kennedy. Cedar Rapids John. There was a bunch of guys from on the team from that area. So it was just very comfortable. It was different, don't get me wrong, up front. But it was very enjoyable to go to a place in the minor leagues that you knew people and you knew people would know you.
And you start off
having played at Iowa.
Yeah,
sorry.
You start off with the Colonels in 1980, the Cedar Rapids Reds at the time.
Reds.
You start off with the Cedar Rapids Reds in 1980. You play 100 games. What was that first full season like for you at the minor league level?
Positive, negative, frustrating, not frustrating, positive. Again, it's when you're not used to playing 100 games and you just play every day, the bad gets really bad, the good's really good. And it's trying to reach a happy medium and figure out how to move forward when you're doing bad and how to keep going when you're doing well. So it was an enjoyable time because a lot of great guys on the team, but a frustrating time.
So 1980 comes and goes. You go back for your second season in 1981, get a taste of Double-A that year. What was that year in 81 like? You got 1 year under your belt. You're back in Cedar Rapids for year two. You go up to Double-A for a little bit. What was 81 like before the 82 season?
again, at 81, at least you knew everything about the game at that point. You knew the frustrations and the positives and the negatives. You knew what was going to go on during the season. I didn't have a great, you know what I mean? I did okay to get moved up, but I didn't do great at double A. So it was enjoyable again, but frustrating, you know, that way. You start to think you're better than you were, and then all of a sudden you compare yourself to the guys who are around you, and maybe you're not as good as you thought you were, and you have to do better and work harder. And that's kind of what I learned from that season, is I need to work a lot harder to keep moving forward, because I wasn't a high draft pick. So I needed to show something to, you know, get a chance.
So 81 comes, 81 goes, you go down to spring training for 1982. I'm just curious, what was your reaction when you got assigned back to Cedar Rapids after the 82 spring training?
Well, again, in all honesty, this is my last year of playing baseball. It was in my mind, because I was out of college. I wasn't like I was a 17-year-old out of high school or 18-year-old. It's like, I'm now going back to A-ball for the third year for a guy who's already been in college. So it was basically, I was assuming this was my last year, so I better enjoy the heck out of it, because if I didn't, I might regret not enjoying it. And like I said, I was intelligent enough to know that I wasn't one of their prospects at that point.
Cedar Rapids Colonels, that the good times roll.
Hearing is important to living life to the fullest. That's why inside every Miracle Ear store, you'll find better laughs at family barbecues. You'll find a better life is in store at Miracle Ear when you experience the Miracle Ear exclusive advantage. It starts with our free hearing assessment, plus innovative products that will fit your needs and budget. With free service and adjustments for life, call 319-243-7105 to schedule a free hearing evaluation and find a better life in store. Our local Miracle Ear team is proud to support the Cedar Rapids Colonels.
Group outings are a great way to unwind and enjoy a night out, and we invite you to reach out to our group sales staff and see all the options we have.
Everybody, everybody, everybody knows when you're at the game, the good times roll. Hey, hey, Colonels, let the good times roll. Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
Talking to Jeff Jones here on the Colonels All-Year Podcast. This is season number 4, episode number 3, and we're about to get into the 1982 season that is still hung up on the wall here at Veterans Memorial Stadium, the 1982 year with 42 home runs. Early in the season, did you get off to a hot start? Did you get going early, or what was the start to the season like for you?
You know, you're making me go back just a couple of years, and I would have to go back to box scores to know exactly how I was doing early on. I knew up front I was with some good players, because on that team you had Eric Davis in center field, you had Paul O'Neill in right field, and that's my only claim to fame, I think, is I ended up making it to the big leagues before those two guys. Not quite as long as either of those guys. But again, if to go back, I would tell you I started the season okay. But I would truly have to go back and stare at the season to know whether I did well right off the jump, you know, that way. I was hitting fourth, I think, behind Davis, you know, that way. And O'Neill was hitting fifth, you know, in the beginning of that season. And so I'm not positive how I started off. It was, like I said, I knew I was going in with a clear head that I either played well or went home.
You say that's a clear head mindset, but it kind of sounds like a lot of pressure on yourself that either you're going to have to do well or your career may be over.
I don't think it was pressure at that point. Like I said, I was 23, but you know what I mean? I wasn't a kid. So it was less pressure, more, I better enjoy this because I really love this game. You kind of think you're going to play it forever, but then all of a sudden you realize you might not play it forever. So all those kind of, not doubts, just the reality of the game itself creeps in.
I'm just curious what the outlook of the Midwest League was at that time. What were the bus rides like? What were the hotels like? What were the stadiums like? If you can go back and take us just in what the Midwest League was like at that time.
It was an old league. I'm not positive it's actual age, you know, that way, but some of the stadiums were not great. The lighting was fair at best. Some of the dugouts, you kind of crawled out of a thing through a little, it felt like an old sewer tunnel to get out to the dugouts. It was unique. I'll say it that much, but I mean, with Quad City, with the different teams, I think Beloit was in it. I think Quad Cities was in it. You know, Madison was in it. There were some neat cities, little cities that you did go to that were actually probably bigger cities than I would think right now. But it felt like an old league. You know, there were some fields that weren't in great shape. Our field was always one of the better we played on. They were pretty fanatic. There was a Bud, I'm forgetting his name right now.
Yep, Bud, you got it. Yep.
He was our groundskeeper, and he was fanatic. I mean, the guy was just good at what he did. And our field was always in great shape relative to almost every other field we played on, you know, that way. So they did a great job, you know, way back when with Bud and Bucky, Buckheister, who was the GM at that point.
Yep. Well, the old Veterans Memorial Stadium opened up in 1949. It closed in the early 2000s. It had one groundskeeper through its entirety. And that was Bud. He was the man at that old ballpark. I'm just curious what that old ballpark was like. You said it was one of the best playing surfaces. What was the ballpark like? What was the atmosphere around baseball in Cedar Rapids?
Again, it was an older ballpark. Obviously, you just stated that. But again, the attitude, Cedar Rapids just welcomed the minor leagues to their city, and it was all the boosters. I mean, I can't say enough about all the people from Cedar Rapids, how wonderfully they treated all of us, you know, whether it was welcoming us at the beginning of the year or parties during the year, just dinners and things like that. They were just amazing. The booster club from Cedar Rapids through the years I was there, they were just outstanding, you know, that way. And the field and all of it, like I said, the locker rooms were older. Everything was older, but it was well kept. It was as well kept as you could keep an old ballpark.
And the team had some good talent on that team with Davis and O'Neill, like you mentioned. Back for you, did you get into a rhythm throughout the season at all? Obviously, a monster year at the plate. Was there something you remember, like, okay, I'm in a really good groove right now, I got to keep this going? Was there any moment like that that you found yourself in a constant stream of just putting together good at-bats?
I would tell you, yes. I don't remember that specifically. I don't remember a groove that way. I just remember it. I was comfortable pretty much the whole year, you know, that way. I'm sure if you go back, I had some offers. I had some, you know what I mean? I had some great runs. I had to, you know what I mean? That way. That's the season of any baseball player. But, you know, hitting behind a Davis and things like that, you know, I think by the end, I knew a bunch of the pitchers from the league. We had been around, you know, I had been there the year before. So you start to learn pitchers and you start to pay more attention to each at bat, what guys throw you, how they throw you. So I'll say, yes, I had to at some point be more comfortable. Do I specifically remember it? No, but you know what I mean? It was enjoyable that season.
Is there any moments that stick out that you remember, a moment from that season, whether it be a big home run or something that pops in your mind from that year?
It's got to be towards the end of the season playing in Quad Cities. I break a bat and Leo George is a catcher for the other team and he uses the same bat. So the last two home runs I hit, I believe, were both with his bat. I still have it in my basement somewhere. I borrowed a bat from him. And like I said, I hit the last home runs on the end. So no matter what, I remember the end of the season because I ended up breaking the record, I think, the last day of the season, that way.
Do you remember the record-breaking home run? Did you know there was a record that you were getting close to?
I sort of do, but I, you know what I mean? I wasn't really, really thinking about it. You know, it wasn't like there was pressure to hit a home run, you know, that way. But like I said, I was just stressed because I broke a bat that I loved, you know, that I used for probably, you know, 25 games. And like I said, fortunately, the guy used an R43, a similar bat that I was using, and, you know, got it. But
you didn't bring a second one to Quad Cities with you?
I did, but I didn't love them. You know, every guy in the minor leagues, we didn't have like a stash of 30 bats that we could, you know, run to. And, you know, that way it was. And by the end of the season, the stash was very, very, very low. Okay. You didn't have a lot of extra bats going on. It's not like the minors was, I'll say, even what it is today, where that, you know, I think they're supplied a little better today than they were in my time, you know, a couple of years ago.
And we touched on some of the talent with O'Neill and Davis. I mean, the Cedar Rapids Reds at that time had a lot of talent flow through Cedar Rapids. What was it like, you know, coming up and playing every day with those guys?
It was enjoyable. I was the old guy. I mean, I have bats that I had Papa J because I was I was old. I mean, Davis was an 18-year-old. O'Neill was an 18-year-old. You know, I had been to college. These guys were truly prospects right out of high school. And I mean, looking back, you can see how talented these kids were. I mean, they were both physically gifted. You know what I mean? That way. I mean, I was 6'2", 200 pounds. Davis was probably 6'3". O'Neill's probably 6'3", almost. You know what I mean? That way. They both had good arms. I had better arms than them at the time. I played right field, but Davis could run like a gazelle. And Paul O'Neill was just a feisty player from day one. I mean, he was throwing helmets and A-ball, but a great guy and a great player. He was just intense. He loved the game, you know, flat out. I mean, they both did. You know, Eric Davis, without some injuries, I think could have been one of the all-timers, you know, that way, because he was as talented from the right-hand side as the Griffies and those kind of guys. And I know I'm throwing him in with some serious names, but he was a heck of a player. Both really great guys also.
We'd have to ask them, but I'm sure, I mean, they must have learned something from you being the leader in that clubhouse. You not only hit 42 home runs, you batted over 300, 1,100 OPS. He drove in 100 runs. I mean, they must have gotten some development from you.
I would hope they did. And I would tell you, it's more of a father figure, like, pay attention to what you're doing. You guys got a chance. You know, I'm sure by the end of the season, I was telling them that they got a chance to be in this game a long time, because after a while, you know who you are and who they are. So I would tell you, yes, definitely. I mean, Eric Davis used my car for half of that summer, I think, you know, that way. So I let him, you know, I mean, these guys were coming into the game, but great guys, tons of talent. And I would hope they learned something from me, you know, that way, or they took something from me.
Stay connected with the Cedar Rapids Colonels all year long by following the Colonels on social media. Catch up with the Colonels on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CR Colonel.
Talking to Jeff Jones here on the Colonels All Here podcast. He knocked 42 home runs in 1982, a Midwest League record for a single season. How different was the 1983 spring training compared to the 1982 spring training after that monster year?
Again, when you go to big league camp versus minor league camp, it might be as different as anything can be. You know what I mean? That way you go from nothing to something. And I don't mean that meanly or anything like that, you know, that way, because I enjoyed minor league camp. So I don't want to kind of diss on minor league camp, because it's all fun. You know, you're playing baseball. You're still playing a game after college into your 20s when most people have real jobs. And I mean, I said that. I live my life backwards. They say if you do a job that's not, you know, if you enjoy doing a job, it's never work. I got to do that to start my career versus end my career. You know, the rest of the time I was just working, you know, that way. But big league camp is big league camp. I mean, I lockered next to Johnny Bench in spring training. I lockered next to him in Cincinnati for the first games I was in. You know, you just have guys that you had looked up to, you know what I mean? I played against Pete Rose, who was with the Phillies at the time. I played against Larry Bowe, who was with the Phillies at the time. You know, Larry Bowe, I have a pennant of that guy from his first game at Connie Mack Stadium, where it said, Larry Bowe, God's gift to baseball, you know, that way. And my sister kept it for a number of years that way. So it's just, it's like being under a microscope. It's significantly different, you know, that way. Forget the meal money and all the Forget the meal money and all the different things. You still have voice? Or did
I still got you.
Okay. Sorry. I apologize. there's messages coming on that are bugging me that I can't get them off the phone quick enough. It was very enjoyable.
Were you surprised when you got the invitation to big league spring training?
I'll say 100%. Yes. You know, that I knew I had a heck of a year, and I mean, they wrote about it in Cedar Rapids a lot, but it's in A ball. I'm not going to demean, but 42 home runs is 42 home runs, you know, that way. I will say that much. I don't care what league you're in. If you're in a wiffle ball league in your backyard, 42 is a good number, you know, that way.
Did you ever imagine you hitting 42 home runs in a professional season?
No. You don't imagine things like that. It just kind of happens. You and I talked yesterday. I mean, it doesn't happen in this day and age, and it is probably one of those records that'll probably stand for a while, because if a guy hits 30 by halfway through the season, he's gone. Okay. He's playing double A. He might be in triple A. You know what I mean? In this day and age. And these athletes are, I was a good athlete. They're way better today. You know, the kids that are playing today are more fanatic about their diets, about their exercise, about their, you know, that way. But no, I did not imagine hitting 42. And like I said, it was enjoyable, extremely enjoyable. And it was fun. And it became normal after the kind of halfway through the season that I was going to hit a decent amount anyway.
And you mentioned the media attention. Were you getting interviewed paper all the time? What was that like?
I mean, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, I don't want to say I was in that paper almost every day, you know what I mean, that way, but it was a lot, you know what I mean? Mark Dukes called me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, who was the reporter at that point, and did an article, you know, similar to what you're doing, you know what I mean, that way. You know, a similar concept. But yeah, I was, I don't want to say a little bit of a star in Cedar Rapids, but it was a town of all of 125,000, I think, at the time. You know, it's a little Midwest city.
So we're circling back, but I want to go back to the 83 Major League spring training. You're in there, you're with the big league guys. And then in 83, you make your Major League debut. I mean, what was that like? Were you in AAA when you got the call? What was that that debut and process for you like?
It's all about big league camp. I mean, I went to big league camp, and the first day they handed me a first baseman's mitt, and I kind of looked at it like a cow looking at a new barn. I had never played first base. They go, you're going to play first base. Dreesen was hurt. Cedeno was hurt. So the first baseman and the right fielder were both hurt. So I played first base for, I'll say, the first 3 weeks of spring training. I almost didn't. I took outfield practice, but I didn't even get in there. So in the end, I probably only hit 250, but I had some RBIs. I had a couple home runs. I had a good spring training for a young kid. And because I could play first base and outfield, I fit the bill. So I uniquely came right out of spring training with the big league team. So, I mean, getting that conversation with Russ Nixon at the time was just otherworldly. It was unique. You know, you're going, wait, did you just say I'm going with the team? You know, so very enjoyable, but I came right out of spring training with the team.
Which is incredible. Only playing a handful of double A games, not even the year prior, but 2 years before.
Correct. Not somewhere I thought I was going to be. And again, I'll say unfortunately or fortunately, I knew I was old enough that I was just a cog in the wheel at that point to be a placeholder, because Cedeno was their right fielder. Dreesen was their first baseman. At that point, in front of Davis and Leo Garcia was in the minor leagues and Paul O'Neill was in the minor leagues, but they had Paul Householder and Dwayne Walker, and they had Eddie Milner, and they had Gary Revitas. So they had a lot of good outfielders and Householder had, I think he had mono, so he had missed almost all of spring training, and he was their heir apparent right fielder, I think, way back when. He was a switch hitter, I believe. So I knew I was a placeholder, but I just said to myself, you know, if I get exceptional, I hit a couple of home, you know what I mean? You never know what's going to happen. So I was excited to go.
What's a major league opening day like?
For anybody that's played baseball, it's everything you think, you know, that way. It's exciting. It's, you know what I mean? And the Reds were typically the first game of the year up until that, you know what I mean? That way. So you knew you were, I don't want to say special, but you were one of the few games that was on TV that particular day, that way. So it's, like I said, it's as good as it gets. It's everything I ever dreamed of, you know, to run out onto a field and I'm going to tell you, we didn't have a packed house in Cincinnati, but when you're playing in front of 30, 40,000 versus the 300, 400 you've played against almost your whole career, it's a lot different and a lot more. It's just, it's a lot of fun.
And we talk about your record of 42 home runs, probably never getting broken. I don't think anyone is going to play their last game of a season in Cedar Rapids and their first game of the season in the major leagues in a long time.
My understanding, there was only a couple that have done that, you know, gone from A to the big leagues, A ball to the big leagues. So it's not a real normal transition. Obviously, like I said, I was a little bit of the exception. A, I was older, and B, had a good sprint. You know what I mean? Just a lot of unique things fell into place with Dreesen being hurt, with Cedeno being hurt, with me having a good season the year before, having a decent spring training with the team. So a lot of things lined up, you know, that way. And that's kind of in every walk of life. You know, sometimes it's about where you are, not who you are, you know, that way. It's right place, right time. I was there. And I mean, I was a decent player on top of it at the time.
When you think back, looking at it holistically from your time in Cedar Rapids, what was your favorite, you know, memory or what stands out to you the most from playing the 3 years you did in Cedar Rapids?
Just being in Iowa. I lived with my roommate's brother and sister-in-law. So, I mean, it was just like being home. That way, Cedar Rapids, it was like a second home. You know, to be there by myself, you know, to be there in Cedar Rapids, you know, having been in Iowa, it was just very comfortable. Right? You know what I mean? That way. That'd be my statement.
And the fans welcomed you in, the paper wrote about you, and 42 home runs later, a record that will most likely never be broken here in the Midwest League.
I would tell you yes. You know, how bad can that be when they're, you feel like you're somebody, you know, that way. And I did, you know what I mean? That's probably the biggest adjustment afterwards. You were reading your name in the paper every day. I mean, we played every day, and whether you did well or didn't do well, you were still reading your name, you know, that way. So it's a different life, you know, that way, a good life. It's wonderful life, you know, that way. I was blessed to be able to do it. God made me 6'2", 220, you know, 200 pounds, and I could run, and I could throw, I could hit, you know, that way. So I'd like to tell you a lot of it was all me. You know, I wasn't Pete Rose. I wasn't a self-made. I ended up being decent, you know, from the jump because of my physical abilities.
Well, Jeff, we really appreciate the time, and your story will be long told here in Cedar Rapids. So we thank you so much for taking the time with us here on the Colonel's Allier podcast this morning.
And Cal, I appreciate you taking the time to call me, and it was a wonderful opportunity to be on with you.
That was Jeff Jones of the Cedar Rapids Reds on season 4, episode 3 of the Colonel's Allier podcast. Colonel's season rolls on here as we flip the calendar to May. Stay tuned for season 4, episode 4.
Invisible Hearing Solutions for ultimate discretion. Miracle Ear is here to help, so you can find a personalized solution that fits your needs, lifestyle, and budget. Miracle Ear has over 70 years of expertise and over 1,500 stores nationwide. Make a sound decision. Call 1-800-MIRACLE now and book your free hearing evaluation.
Your local Miracle Ear team is proud to support your Cedar Rapids Colonels. Enjoy the game.